I'm Lee Blue, and this is Double Stack, where WordPress freelancers discover the tech stack and the business development stack to become high-value, sought-after WordPress consultants. So if you're tired of burning yourself out with those high-stress, low-budget projects, and you're ready to start working with clients you love at the rates you're really worth, then you're in the right place. All of this is 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. I was part of a conversation yesterday where we were going over, I was listening in to a conversation where people were talking about common objections that that they encounter on, you know, when they're trying to onboard new clients. And I was just listening in. I wasn't contributing. It was more of like a panel discussion. And I was just amazed by not only the objections, but also the answers that were given to, you know, how to appropriately handle these types of objections. And today, what I thought would be really interesting would be to go through like the top five objections that people have. And then I wanted to take it from two perspectives. The first perspective being, okay, so what are these common objections? And then for each objection, I'm going to list three of the bad answers that I thought were given to how to handle them. And then after we kind of go through that, then I'm going to go through and show you, well, what's a better approach? Like, how can you do better than this? And not only that, but why are these objections surfacing in the first place? What does that say about the mindset of your client and how they're viewing you with regard to your offer? And what does it say actually about your own mindset, your own marketing strategies, and your business structure that are causing these types of objections to surface in the first place? So let's just go ahead and dive right into it. The first one was kind of like right off the top, which was, you know, people approach a client at, you know, offering web design, web development services, marketing services, that sort of thing. And the client says, you know what, I don't need any more customers. And so that question was kind of posed to the panel. The panel then kind of responded. It was like three people on the panel, and they kind of gave their thoughts and their answers, each giving them some replies to give back. And the first one was, you know, if someone says to you that they don't need any more customers, then what you should say is, well, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. If you're not getting more customers, you're losing customers. And then really try to put some leverage on folks to say, you know, basically and to kind of emphasize the fear factor of, hey, you really do need, even though you don't think you need more customers, you really do. And trying to change their mind as to whether or not they need more customers. Or, you know, reply number two that I thought was really bad was, your competitors are making progress and you're not. So like, if you don't put a website out there and your competitors do, or if your website's way outdated and your competitor's website's really great, then they might steal your customers from you. And, you know, you need to be able to keep up, you know, all that stuff. Kind of in line with that first objection handling method, which was saying, like, if you're not moving forward, you're moving back. This was kind of like, well, if you don't do something, then your competitors will sort of, you know, steal your clients from you. And the third one is, well, you know, marketing isn't really a sprint, it's a marathon. So, you know, what you really need to be doing is launch a new website, and then we'll kind of use that website over time. So maybe you don't need new customers today, but let's go ahead and build a website anyway, so that, you know, in a few months from now, or, you know, by the end of the year, something like that, then when you do need the new customers, then you kind of have this marketing marathon going and you can kind of get clients in that way. And the reason that I consider all of those answers to be bad answers is because you're not helping the client solve a problem that's resonating with them. That, like, they're not, you're trying to sell them something. And, you know, one of the fundamental concepts that I teach and that I implement in my own business is I don't sell anything to anybody. And that doesn't mean I don't onboard new clients. It just doesn't, it means that I, instead of selling, I serve. And what that means is, you don't push stuff on people that they don't want or that they don't need. And we'll dive in a little bit. I'm going to talk about the difference between selling and serving and the difference between who owns the actual problem that you're solving. So we'll talk about that here in a little while. But, you know, right off the bat, you know, this first issue about, you know, trying to combat a client saying that they don't need to work with you because they don't need more clients, with, you know, with kind of making them feel afraid that if they don't move forward with you, then they're going to lose the clients they already have, or their competitors are going to, you know, take their business, or, you know, they need to do it anyway with future looking, you know, like trying to make them look further, like the whole marketing is a marathon, not a sprint concept. And you know, all of those I feel like are bad answers, because you're not actually helping with the problems that the client really has. And on top of that, you're just selling them things that they don't feel like they want or need. And even if you're successful at convincing them that they do in fact need a website because of these fear tactics that you're kind of putting on the table, then the downside of that is it's going to be a low ticket project, a low ticket offer, because you're not going to be able to get that high ticket kind of buy-in, you know, that recurring relationship, you know, where you're bringing leadership and trust and integrity to the equation. It's just kind of setting things off on the wrong foot right from the beginning. So those are kind of three bad answers to that. Let's dive into the second one. The second one is, you know, what if you offer to build a website for somebody and they say, you know what, my customers don't search for me online. So the second objection is my customers don't search for me online. And then, so then the panel gets into the mix and they say, okay, well, here's the answers that I would give. And so basically all of them were basically in the position of saying, you know, changing their mind, saying, oh, yes, they actually do search for you online, even though the customer literally just said, my customers don't search for me online. And then you're supposed to say, oh, yes, they are. And then, you know, elaborate on how, you know, everything is going better in the future, you know, going mobile, and everybody's, you know, got Alexa and Google Assistants and Siri and everything like that. So even if you don't think they're kind of voting, searching for you online, they actually are, because it's these voice activated things or whatever. And so basically changing their perspective. I mean, there's a little something to that, you know, maybe a little education helps with that, I guess. I don't know. But in general, I feel like it's a fundamentally flawed approach to selling a high ticket, high value website to someone. And so so objection number two, you know, the bad answer number two is future thinking, saying, well, maybe people aren't searching for you online today, but, you know, in the future, you know, more and more things are going mobile. And what about the next generation of people who are really, you know, just tied to their mobile devices or whatever? They're going to be searching for you online. And then, you know, and the third guy really kind of piggybacked on that concept and said, oh, the world is going mobile. If you're not really connecting in with that, then you're going to get left behind. And so, but here's the thing. It's like, what if legitimately clients don't generally find people online? Like, for example, I know most of my clients, most of my web design clients, they don't find me online. And so we've talked a lot in the past about how you don't have to have a portfolio. You don't have to have tons of testimonials on your website. You don't have to list every skill that you know how to do on your website. You know, all of the, you barely even need a website in order to onboard high ticket clients when you're coming, like in the kind of business that we're in, where we're consulting with businesses, we're growing businesses through the types of skills that we're bringing to the table with our online marketing, digital marketing, website development, that kind of stuff. I think I've gotten one client, like out of the 17 years I've been doing this, I'm certain that one of the clients that I've worked with in the past found me online. He was a guy, I'm in Virginia, he was in California. He Googled up, he had some really specific thing. He needed a particular WordPress plugin developed for a particular function of his website. He happened to find my website and called me, and I got that client because of my website. All of the other clients I've gotten for the last 17 years have not come because of my website. So if, you know, it's legitimately the case that my clients, probably your clients, if they're good clients, are not going to be out there searching for the things you're blogging about, searching for the kinds of things. Your site's just not going to come up for the kinds of queries that people are issuing to Google. And so therefore, it is, and that's not unique to just our industry. There's other industries out there as well where there's just not a lot of people that are searching online for those types of services. So all that is to say that trying to then change your client's mind and force them to believe that their clients really are searching for the online, I think is a really bad approach. And again, when we get down to the fifth one here, I'm gonna show you what's the common thread that ties all these things together. The third objection is, I don't need a website. Like, I don't need a website at all, right? So there's really two objections. Sometimes people will say, I don't need a website flat out at all, or I don't need a new website. Like, the website I already have is fine. So if someone says, I don't need a new website, then, you know, the three bad answers that I suggest not saying are things like technical issues, like, oh, well, your website's not responsive. You need to have a more responsive site, or otherwise it's not going to look good on a mobile device. Therefore, we should rebuild your whole website. Or your site loads too slowly. If your site doesn't load fast enough, then it's not going to, you know, the Google page speed rank is going to be too low and you're not going to rank well on search engines and blah, blah, blah. You need a faster website. Or you know, or bash the platform that they're on, right? So if they're not on WordPress and they happen to be on Wix, you could say, you know, the Wix is a mess. You don't want to have a Wix website, or you don't want to have a Weebly website, or, you know, whatever platform they're on, you know, just bash that and then, you know, tell them how great WordPress is and kind of onboard them into a WordPress website. That's a stupid idea. Don't do that, because that's not going to win the client. You're going to have to come up with some better reasoning for why working with you is going to be a better experience for them, or a better better result or outcome for their business if they do decide to work with you. And bashing the platform isn't really going to help. Tearing down what they've already done is not really going to help. That's a bad answer. It's not an inaccurate answer, right? Like, I fundamentally agree that WordPress is a better platform than all the other ones we just mentioned for the majority of situations. Not every situation, but a lot of, like, the majority, like anybody who's really serious about their business, really trying to put online tools in place to onboard new clients, to increase their brand visibility, to, you know, increase just awareness of what they're doing, you know, build an email list, like all those types of things, WordPress is fundamentally a superior platform if you know how to work it. And that's a pretty big if, because a lot of people don't know how to do anything, so they kind of fall back to the kind of point and click your way to a Wix website kind of concept. So anyway, if somebody says they don't need a website, trying to like bash the technology of their current website to encourage them to move over to WordPress or to do a new job is a bad approach for that. It's not going to win you a client that's happy and really energized and looking forward to working with you. That's a recipe for getting those clients that begin to sort of intellectually consent to the fact that, okay, maybe my website needs to look better on a mobile device, or okay, you know, maybe it's not the best platform or whatever. But that's the, like, if you send out a proposal to fix it and they just sit on it and they don't reply back to you and you're wondering, you know, I thought they agreed with me, why aren't they moving forward? That's the reason why. There's no motivation. There's no urgency. You're not really solving any major problems for them. And instead, you're just kind of bashing what they've already got. And it doesn't feel good to do it when you're on the selling side. And it certainly doesn't feel good to receive that if you're on the client side. So you don't get that good relationship going. And it's just a bad approach to onboard new clients with that. And then the variation of that objection, which is, I don't need a website at all because I use Facebook, or, you know, our Facebook page is all we need. If somebody says that to you, then the three bad answers for that are to make them feel afraid of Facebook for some reason. And, you know, say like, well, what if Facebook changes, or what if the Facebook algorithm shifts and now all of a sudden your page doesn't show up to the audience that you've built, or your, you know, when you put a post out there, whatever, doesn't show up. Well, the fact of the matter is it doesn't show up already. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but when you post a post to your Facebook page, then it shows up in somewhere between 1-3% of your followers' news feeds if they're following your page. And of course, if it's a business page, the ratio is even lower than it is if it's on a personal page. But even best case scenario, you've got 100 followers, you put a post out there and 3 of them see what you said. That's not good. You're not going to be able to get a lot of traction with that. It's, you know, it's not good. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to pay to boost the post. So, you know, Facebook's business model is to get money from boosted posts and ads and things like that. And so if you want to reach all of your audience, maybe even plus more, then you can pay to boost the post. And that's really kind of the, you know, that's the financial paradigm that Facebook is operating in. And so if you're working with a client and they believe that, you know, they're trying to just use their Facebook page to kind of get traction and whatever, and then you're kind of bashing Facebook and saying, well, you know, what if Facebook changes or whatever? Even with the little tidbit of knowledge that I just shared just a minute ago about how their posts really aren't reaching their audience, that's still not very effective, because people can still go to the page. Like, for example, if you post a blog post, it reaches 0 people, right? Because there's no syndication whatsoever. So like if they had a website and they were posting stuff to that, then, you know, it doesn't go to anybody. Whereas at least if they post it on Facebook, it goes to some people. So, you know, just the fact that Facebook doesn't show it to everybody, it sounds bad on the surface, but in terms of actually getting results, which is what we're talking about, then, you know, shifting to a website approach is even worse, because you know, unless you get email involved or some other form of syndicating your message or notifying people that a new blog post or whatever is out there, then literally zero people are notified. So Facebook's better than that, even without a paid boost. So that's kind of a bad answer, is saying, you know, well, what if Facebook changes or what if whatever or variation? Well, Facebook is dying. And then you kind of begin to mention privacy concerns or, you know, all the stuff that was in the news a while back about, you know, people upset about the ads and the targeting and that kind of stuff. But I haven't seen any evidence really of that. I mean, I've heard anecdotally people feeling frustrated with Facebook, but in terms of a business platform where you can advertise and you can, you know, get your message out there, I haven't seen any significant downgrade at all. And in fact, I think that Facebook, out of all of the different platforms out there, it serves the widest ranges of audiences above LinkedIn, above Twitter, above Instagram, above all of them when it comes to trying to connect with like business marketing. So, and again, you know, that's not for everybody, but in a large percentage of cases, you know, if you're going to go out there and say that Facebook is dying because of privacy concerns, that's just not true. So, so there's that. It's definitely not true now. I don't see it. I don't foresee it being true in any near term foreseeable future. I mean, maybe 20 years or whatever, but I don't think it's going to be any type of an issue because it just doesn't. I'm not seeing any evidence of that. So that's a bad answer. Trying to convince a client of something that's not true is, and just to make them feel afraid of relying on Facebook and therefore they have to build a website with you. Bad approach. So, and then the third one would be, you know, well, let's compare Facebook to other platforms. You know, you don't want to be on Facebook because your audience is really on LinkedIn. So if all you have is a Facebook page, you're not reaching the people on LinkedIn. You're missing out on a huge opportunity. Or, you know, swap out the different social media platforms and, you know, to your liking. But if that's the approach where you compare different platforms and say, well, you're on the wrong platform or you need more platforms or what you really need is a website, none of the platforms or whatever, then again, it's just you're selling something to somebody that they don't feel like they need, and then you're trying to convince them of the need, and it's and in the process you're kind of bashing what they have. And again, it's uncomfortable for you to kind of say those types of critical things. It's uncomfortable for them to hear those types of critical things. And even if you eventually, you know, intellectually win the argument and they agree that, you know, they need more than just a Facebook page, they don't have the urgency, the momentum to really take action with you. You get these delays. You get clients that never give you content. You get clients that never sign the contract in the first place. You get contracts that don't want to pay a high ticket price. They're haggling on price. They're nitpicky. They're frustrating. There's a lot of things that go wrong when you approach clients with any of these types of these angles. And so, you know, I consider those all to be negative ways to go about onboarding clients. We'll get to the positive ones in just a second. One more. So the last one was, there was a lot of conversation. Again, like every time I hear anybody talking about WordPress and being a WordPress consultant, eventually at some point in the conversation, sooner or later, it all turns towards, you've got to have retainers. You have to have monthly revenue. You have to have sustainable revenue coming in. And the best way to do that is you got to get people on these monthly maintenance plans. You got to get the WordPress plugins updated and the WordPress core updated. And you got to have backups and security. And you just can't let it sit. You have to do things, you know, periodically, you know, once a week or at least once a month to keep things up and running. And then, of course, as soon as, you know, all the techies in the room, they all agree. I agree. You probably agree. Everyone agrees that you do need to do those things to keep a WordPress site in particular healthy. But here's the thing. All of the clients, they tend to say, you know what, I don't need it. And so, you know, clients will say things like, you know, I'll handle things on my own, or I'll do my own updates, or, you know, just show me how to do it one time and then I'll take care of it from there or whatever. And of course, the WordPress consultant really wants the client to pay $50, $100 a month, at least, whatever, you know, something like that, just to get some recurring revenue coming in from the hosting and the WordPress maintenance. And, you know, they're getting a lot of pushback from the clients. So what do you do? And so here are the bad answers. So I would think that one bad answer is to try to say to the client that what we need to really do is handle things proactively. Because if you pay me $100 per month, then I'll keep the site up to date and all the plugins and patches and blah, blah, blah. Everything will be good to go so that your site will never be hacked or it'll never have a problem and everything will continue to run smoothly. And when you need to do updates, it's good to go. And so if you don't do that, then this is where the fear tactics come into play again. Otherwise, you know, if the site does get hacked, it's going to be 10 times more expensive to fix. And, You know, I mean, I've seen people say things like, I've seen sites that could never be fixed. It's so heavily hacked, you just can't fix it. You just have to, you know, it's just a big problem. Or bad answer number two is, you know, Google will penalize you for hacks. Like if Google realizes your site is defaced and, you know, bad thing and malware is on the site and all this other stuff is going on, then you're going to lose your search engine rankings. And, you know, how long is it going to take to get that back, if ever? And so, you know, let's scare them about their SEO or their whatever. And so, like, I feel like those are fundamentally bad approaches to all of these types of monthly maintenance arguments. Because here's the truth. Even if the site was so badly hacked, which I've never seen, by the way, I've never seen a site that has been so poorly constructed or so massively hacked that you couldn't at least go get a backup before it got hacked and restore it to at least that point, which is could be just yesterday or maybe a week before in worst case scenarios, as long as you got backups running. And most hosts, by the way, like if you're hosting at Flywheel or WP Engine or pretty much anywhere, even self-hosted stuff, like if you set up a DigitalOcean droplet or whatever, and you put on like, you know, iThemes backup software or whatever, you know, there's all kinds of automated ways to, what is it called? Backup Buddy. You could use something like that and you're just you can do backups. And just at that bare minimal level there, you can just roll back to yesterday and then you're good to go. And so even if you're doing no maintenance at all, just run those backups, roll back to yesterday and you're good to go. And so like to say that it's going to cost 10 times more to fix the hack than it would to be to prevent the hack in the first place oftentimes isn't true. Because a lot of these sites that people are offering these maintenance plans for, they built the whole freaking site for $1,000. Or maybe they spent $2,000, right? And so if their spin is, say you built a site for $1,000 and you're going to charge $100 a month to do this maintenance. And then the client says, no, I'm not going to do the maintenance. And then, you know, a year goes by and then the site really does get hacked, right? On the 12th month or whatever, then there's a big problem. And it's so bad, it's worse than I've ever seen. There were no backups, nothing. You totally just had to start over from scratch. You only paid $1,000 to build the entire site. And if they had been paying $100 a month for 12 months, that'd have been $1,200 to prevent something that may never have even happened. And so it's just not true that for most clients that it's 10 times more expensive to fix a hack than to prevent a hack. It's just not true. Now, granted, there are other factors in the mix, right? So like if you've got a really, really big site with tons of pages, or if you've got, you know, e-commerce coming in and your site's, you know, actually actively making money for you or whatever, you know, the downtime has a negative cost to it. You know, like there's that's a bad thing. But the general story is that, you know, preventing the problem is going to be a lot more cost effective than, you know, trying to fix something once it's a big problem. It's not a very strong argument for a lot of cases because most of the time websites don't cost that much. Most of the time, if the site's down for an afternoon while you restore a backup, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, it's not great. You don't want that, but it's not the end of the world. And so it's and clients know that. And it's hard to really get to the point where that you know, let's buy insurance for my website at a really high ticket price, like $1,200 a year, which is basically the cost of a lot of these sites, you know, from start to finish. It's just a difficult thing to do. And it's hard to onboard clients with for that. And that's why everybody says clients say no all the time. And then to try to, you know, add on to it, you know, these fear tactics like Google's going to penalize you, you're going to lose your SEO, all this other stuff. That's generally not true either. Like because you can restore the backup and all of that stuff. And another one would be, you know, if people don't want the maintenance plans, then what you do is you start telling them about all the stuff you're actively going to be doing that you're preventing them from having to do on their own, like, you know, like doing the backups, like updating the plugins and like having a staging environment, all the stuff that goes in to, you know, really running the site effectively. You know, you start talking about all this stuff and how you're going to be doing it. And it's, you know, it's worth your time, you know, even if it's an hour or maybe 2 hours or whatever out of the whole month of you doing it. At least they don't have to spend those 2 hours. And if they did, it would probably take them 10 hours because you know how to do it more efficiently, whatever. But here's the thing. When you start talking about that stuff, you're just talking right over their heads. They don't know what all that means or what that does or any of that stuff. You know. And furthermore, if you're trying to convince somebody to move off one of the other platforms like Wix or Weebly or Squarespace or something like that, where the backups are already in place, you know, you don't have to do maintenance on those sites because the system itself kind of keeps itself rolling. And then you say, let's move over to WordPress and now you can pay me an extra $100 a month you weren't paying before for the same end result, right? A website that stays healthy. That's a hard sell. And so that's why I feel like all of those answers to all of those questions or those objections are just not putting the right foot forward. It's not a really good way to move forward in every single one of those scenarios. So here I'm listening to this whole discussion and I'm thinking, good grief, you know, if this is the advice people are getting, it's no wonder that people are having a hard time onboarding new clients or charging the rates they really need to charge to stay in business, or giving themselves enough income from the project to do their best work on the project so the clients get the results that they're looking for. If these are the conversations that are taking place, then I can totally understand why price pressure is so heavy. Everything's going down. It's because of this. So what's a better approach? Let's take a look. Let's kind of just back up, kind of take a deep breath and take a fresh look at what's going on here. And so what's the common thread? You know, what's going on? Like, why are clients objecting in this way in the first place? And what does this say about your own mindset and your marketing strategies and even your business structure that these objections are coming up in the first place? And so the common thread between all five of these objections is that you're trying to sell something to someone that they don't feel like they need, right? You're making an offer to solve a problem that isn't actually a problem that they own. Now, I want to be clear, it's not necessarily the case that they don't have the problem, right? But what I mean by the ownership of the problem is that the realization that the thing needs to be fixed originates in their head. You're not telling them that they have the problem. So like the difference between that would be, If you come and you're saying, hey, you know, your site's not responsive, it doesn't look good on mobile devices, hey, look, here it is on my phone, it looks like trash, you're now introducing a new problem that they have in their business, but you're kind of like the owner of the problem and you're now giving it to them. Whereas if they come to you and say that they have a particular issue, they're not getting enough clients, they can't charge the right prices, they're not getting any leads or whatever it is that they've got as their issues, then they own the problem. And if you can solve those types of problems, none of these objections happen in the first place. Because here's the thing, every single one, I don't need any more customers. Well, if someone told me, hey, you know what, I don't need any more customers, the first thing I'd say is you need to raise your prices. Because if you don't feel like you need any more customers, you could be charging more per customer and have fewer customers. And the whole supply and demand thing comes into play. So business consulting, you know, totally opens the door to when somebody says that. But here's the other thing. If someone felt like they didn't really need any help with anything, or they didn't need any more customers, or whatever, then why would I offer to get them more customers if they don't want more customers, right? So, you know, you're offering things that people don't want. And that's the essence of selling. And what I like to do and think is a much better approach is serving. And the difference between selling and serving is when you're selling something to someone, You're saying, hey, let me build you a website. Let me do some social media marketing for you. Let me do some branding for you. And they're like, I don't want that. I don't need a new website. My customers don't find me online. I don't need any. I use Facebook. And all of these objections that we just went through, this is the reaction that you get when you sell on people. And people can tell the difference. People know if you're selling them or if you are serving them. Nobody likes to be sold. I'll tell you that right now. And evidence of that is they come up with all of these objections saying they don't need more of that stuff. And so that's a fundamental difference between what everybody else is kind of doing and what actually makes a difference so that you can give the kind of results your clients really need. Because the truth is, most businesses, not all, you know, some people are fine, whatever, they've got their own thing going on, they don't need help, whatever, but most businesses need help with their website, with digital marketing, with their presence online to optimize their entire business, to make more effective use of their offline marketing. What kind of tools can you put in online to do that? Or to help educate people, or to help segment their audience, or to help them get the right message to the right people at the right time. Like all of these types of things are things that most businesses, almost all, would really like help with at some level. But when you sell stuff to people, it doesn't work, and you get objections like this. And again, let's talk a little bit more about whose problems are you solving. So when you come to the table with, hey, let me build you a website, let me do some social media marketing, let me do some SEO work for you, the problem that you're solving is really yours in two different ways and not the client's. And here's what I mean by that. The client doesn't realize on their own. So again, like we talked about, the realization, the origination of the realization of the problem doesn't happen on the side of your client. You're bringing that to them. You're bringing that, right? And so You're introducing the problem to them, and in that sense, you own the problem. In the other sense, they'd probably be just as fine without you, but you need the business, right? So the reason you're out there marketing is because you want the clients, you want the income, you're selling to try to get your revenue up. And there's nothing wrong with that in the sense that everybody needs to make revenue to stay in business. But what is wrong with it is it's this selling mentality. It's like, what's in it for me as the person doing the selling? And like, I'll sell, you know, you want a website? I'll build it. I'll do it. You know, whether I think it's going to make an impact for your business, whether it's going to help, whether it's going to be better or not. Ultimately, if you tell me to build a website, I'll do it. I'll do a great job. I'll do my best work. I'll do everything that I know how to do to make it look great and run smooth and all that other stuff. But you have to take the next step and say, is this going to be a good investment for my client? Like, is this going to be a positive return on investment? Is it a good idea? Is the business side of the equation really being met? Or am I just selfishly accepting these projects because I know how to do what they're asking and I'm going to do a great job at it? But are you really thinking through whether or not the implementation of what you've been asked to do is going to be the most effective thing that can happen? Is it the most effective use of their money? Or should they just bought advertising or something like that in some other form rather than working with you? And so that's a fundamentally different concept, both in terms of who owns the problem and in terms of whose interests are really being met the best. Like, and most of the time, when you get answers like this, you get people, it comes from web designers and consultants, whatever, that go out there who need clients. And so they say, let me do this for you. Let me do this for you. Let me build you a website. And, you know, you need a better logo and your site looks like crap on mobile devices. And, you know, don't you know how many people are on mobile devices these days? And, you know, and trying to convince clients of stuff that they maybe don't understand fully or don't care about or isn't really making a difference. Or maybe they're like, hey, you know what? I already have a website. It doesn't do crap for me. Why do I need to do a bigger one or a better one or a new one? You know, it's just not something that's effective for me. We have a lot more success in something else. And then you try to convince them, hey, you know what? If you just had a better site, whatever. But the bottom line is you want the work. You want to build the sites. You want the income from that. And so the real primary interest is I just want the project. I just want to take the work. I need to be able to, you know, keep my revenue going up. And anybody who wants a website, I'll build it for them. You know, that kind of thing. And I think that's a really bad approach to take. That's the selling approach. What I'm talking about is the serving approach, where you actually offer something where you're solving issues that they have. Like, the problem is their problem. And when you do that, when you address the issues that they have, none of the objections that I just mentioned here, none of these five objections even come up in the first place. So you don't need to have answers for these objections. The fact that these objections are being, you know, being discussed is because of this selling concept where you're out there pushing products and services on people that they don't need, they don't want, they don't understand. You know, you're trying to solve problems that you are bringing to the table that aren't really their problems. You're not really solving an urgent need for them. And even if they eventually conceptually agree, like even if you win the argument and they eventually agree, oh yeah, you know, you're right, I really need a website or whatever, they're not going to invest in these high ticket offers, and you're not going to have the long-term relationships. They're going to feel kind of pressured and bullied and pushed into it. You're going to get, you know, delays and all kinds of stuff. It's just a bad approach in the first place. On the other hand, if you can connect in with clients in a way where you're bringing to the table leadership and confidence and integrity and all of the experience that you have, and then focus that entirely on their business so that you can bring them a level of success that's greater than what they could achieve on their own, right? So that's a big difference. Let me say that in another way. Most of the time, web designers show up and ask people to tell them what to do, right? So you show up at the client and you have this discovery session and you say, you know, what do you want your website to do? Who are we serving? Who's the market? You know, what colors, how many pages, you know, whatever, you know, trying to get us to build a, like a scope of work. And for when you're working with small businesses, trying to help them build their branding, then that's not the approach. Now, if you've got this big software project or whatever, you know, that's a different situation. But what I'm talking about is when you go and you meet with these local small businesses, medium-sized businesses, whatever, and you're going to build a website for them, if you are asking them to tell you what to do, then it's upside down because they don't know what to say, and you're going to get objections like the ones we just talked about today. But if you, on the other hand, go out to them and present an offer that's going to solve the problems that they have, that's the fundamental different approach that's going to make all of these objections go away. You don't even have to deal with them in the first place because you're not offering them stuff that solve problems that they don't have, which is why the reason that all of these objections come up is because you say that you want to sell something to somebody. They hear, this guy wants me to, wants to take my money for something. Resist, resist, resist. I don't need that stuff. You know, here's my objection. Here's my objection. Another objection. And all of these different things because you're offering them stuff that they don't feel like they need. Even if in reality they perhaps might, but the way that the marketing approach, what it says about your marketing strategy, what it says about your offer, what it says about your business structure in the sense of, hey, what if you just built the site and then left? And again, like when we get down to the retainers, most people will always say no to this whole WordPress, maintenance package concept because they're going to say, hey, you know what? Heck, let's roll the dice. You know, I'm not paying $100 a month for this. If the site gets hacked, we'll just figure out what happens then. Maybe, we'll just roll back to a backup or whatever. Or even if we have to rebuild the whole site, it'll probably be cheaper than having to pay you $100 a month for the next 12 months or whatever, or indefinitely. So when we get down to these retainers, like, yes, I fundamentally and in every possible way agree that you need recurring revenue coming in for your business if you want to have a stable, scalable business for yourself. Because if you don't have that, then you're just rolling the dice every single month. And like you get the feast or famine problem and your income's all over the place and you never know what to expect and you can't really hire anybody to help because, maybe things are slammed right now, but what about next month? Do you have to lay the person off because it's just so unpredictable and maybe for whatever reason things are seasonal? And you know that things are just going to go down at a particular time and way up at another. How do you level that out? You level it out with recurring revenue, and you get recurring revenue by continuing to work with your clients on an ongoing basis. But you can't do it with just WordPress maintenance and hosting packages. And we've talked several times in the past about this. You can go like check some of the previous videos or whatever, or if you go to doublestack.net/blog, you can kind of scroll through and search for them a little bit easier than you can here in the Facebook group, and I'll post replays over there. But the point about these maintenance packages is you're going to have to do something better than that. You can't just do the maintenance. And another thing you can't do is you can't just say, hire me for 5 hours per month or hire me for 10 hours per month. And I'll give you a reduced hourly rate if you guarantee to pay for, 10 hours per month or whatever. And so, clients are going to say no to that too, because they don't know what to have you do in those months. I talk to people all the time, some of whom have successfully gotten clients onto this, 5 hour or 10 hour per month kind of thing, where it's just like, hey, I'm on board for 10 hours a month. And then, then everybody kind of readily admits that the client doesn't really come back for those hours. And then you get into the question, well, do I have to offer rollover hours? Like, what if they didn't do all 10 hours this month? Did they get 20 hours next month or whatever? And you still end up with the feast or famine problem if that's the case. Or you're just kind of taking money from the client that they're not really getting the value out of it. And again, that's selling, not serving. And so so there is a fundamentally better approach to this. And here's what it is. So like if I had to boil down how to reshape the entire business structure for WordPress consultants into one sentence, the one sentence would be this: how can you intentionally pursue the clients you can serve the best? And the four things packed into that, first is the intentionality, meaning be intentional, like be proactive, like think through the markets you want to serve. That's thing number one. Thing number two is the pursuit. And what that means is let's put you on the offense so that you're actually going out and getting the clients, not sitting back hoping somebody sends you a referral or somebody stumbles upon your website or you just happen to be connect on Facebook or whatever. Like, don't just sit back and kind of play defense, get on the offense. Because like, here's the thing, like if you're like watching football or whatever, and you've got a really strong defensive line or whatever, you might even score a few points, right? You might be able to make an interception and run it back for a touchdown or pick up a fumble or get a safety or something like that. You can score points from the defense, but you're not going to score a lot. You're not going to go anywhere near where you would if you had a really strong offense and a really strong defense. The offense really scores the points. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about pursuing clients. Go out there and, put together an offer that they can't refuse and that you're really combining all of the things that you know how to do and going out and offering to do that for the clients that you can serve the best. And so again, and let's get into the serving side of it. So we talked about the intentional pursuit of the clients you can serve. So thing number three is service-oriented business structures, meaning that you're not just selling stuff, you're not just offering technical services and selling that to people who don't understand or need them or feel like they even want them, but instead you're solving the problems that they have. You're solving business-oriented issues and you're serving them on an ongoing basis, meaning that it's not a one-stop shop fix kind of thing where you just build a site and move on, because that's not serving, that's selling. If you're building a website and you give it to the client and then you leave, you're not really in the service business. You're not serving them in that way because you're just selling them a website. Because here's the thing, even everyone knows that if you put a website or, you know, anything that has to do with any online digital marketing tool, website all the way through social media, email, whatever, and you implement it and just sit it there, nobody is going to, it's not going to do anything. It's going to have no impact. It's going to be equally as effective as a car in the driveway with no gas in the tank. It's a nice car. If you want to look at it and go out to the driveway, there it is. But you're not going to drive anywhere. You're not going to get anything done because there's no gas in the tank. And if that's you, if you're the kind of person just building these sites and not continuing to help your client on an ongoing basis, then you're not serving them at the level that they really deserve. And the other thing behind that is, if you think that they are going to pick up the ball and kind of, you know, keep it going from the point where you implement it and then move on, you're wrong again. The vast majority of clients will not do anything with regard to their online marketing presence, with regard to, you know, blogging, email marketing, you know, building an email list, helping with lead magnets, helping with any of the things, any of their social media stuff. Like, if you're relying on them to do anything with regard to their digital marketing, the chances are massive failures in the near-term future because they won't do anything. They're going to be so busy with the other stuff. And the reason they don't do anything, there's a bunch of reasons. A, they're just too freaking busy. You know, they're too busy running their own show to actually add on a whole nother job of being a digital marketer for themselves. Two, they don't really know how to do it. You might have shown them the tools to get it done, but they're not going to actually do it. Three, even if they did know how to do the tools, and if they did have the time, they don't know what to say. They don't know what the content creation side of it is a mess. Or if they had to, like, you know, find an image or do some kind of graphical work to kind of complement a post or whatever, they can't generate that either. And so they don't do it. They don't like it. They don't feel comfortable with it. They don't feel like it's effective. And they would much rather spend their time on the things that they're good at and really feel like there's, you know, generating some kind of result from them. You know, they just want to see the fruits of their labor, right? And, you know, kind of becoming a digital marketer for themselves is not going to happen. And so what that means is, if you think that you're serving them because you've set up a really nice platform and then now they're going to take it, they're not going to take it. And you're actually not serving them at the level that they need, that they're counting on you for. So it's critical to set up these retainers in order to be able to have the monthly revenue coming in to give yourself the opportunity to drive the results that they're really counting on you for. It's a two-step process. You have to set up the platform and you have to keep it rolling. So that's the whole idea. And so back to the final sentence about how do you intentionally pursue the clients you can serve the best. So we talked about intentionality. So you don't accept every project that comes across your desk. Be intentional about who you want to go after and then go after them. Be on the offense and connect in with these clients and then serve them at the level that they really deserve, what they're counting on you for. Don't just sell them stuff. And then the best is the final part of this sentence. Why are you the best? Why work for you? Why work with you instead of somebody else? And that begins to bring it around full circle to the intentionality part. The best part is, like, how can you orchestrate the things that you're good at, the interests that you have, the passions that you have, to really be able to go out and be the best solution that your clients could have ever hoped for. So when they say yes to you, they're making the best decision they could have ever made in their entire business lives, because you are going to do the best job possible, far above everyone else, because you've taken the time to be intentional. You've taken the time to pursue them. You've taken the time to think through what serving really means. And now you're going to show up and do your best work, both for you and for them. And that's a fundamental difference from all of the other people that are out there that are just selling stuff and getting objections, like the ones we talked about today. So if that sounds like something that you want to do and you want to, you know, kind of see if maybe I can help you with that, then I am here for you for that. I've set my calendar up at doublestack.net/call. and we can talk about this stuff and, you know, see if, you know, what can I do to help you, right? So if you want to dial in your marketing, if you want to figure out how to, you know, make sure that your price points are consistent with what you're offering to make sure that you're not priced out of the market, but that you're still charging enough to make sure you can, in fact, show up to do your best work. You know, that's a really big thing. Or if you really feel like, well, you know, the economy is so saturated, there's so many people that can build websites, you know, how can I differentiate myself? Well, the way to differentiate yourself is to do the kind of stuff we just talked about, intentionally pursue those clients you can serve the best and show up with leadership and with confidence and with the fullness of your experience so that you're not just, you know, using a sliver of your experience to compete against someone who's just brand new, because you're gonna be saying the same words, right? You're gonna say, build you a website, you know, fix your social media, whatever. If you're saying those same words, your clients are gonna have a hard time differentiating between why working with you is better than them if you're all selling the same cheap commodity technical services. And so if you want to figure out how do you fix that, how do you make it so clients understand that working with you is different and better and fundamentally superior to not working with you because you've taken the time to really be intentional about pursuing your clients and serving them to get them the results that they need, that's where I can come in and I can help you with this. I've got, maybe the double stack program's right for you. Maybe you want to be part of that where, you know, clients, like literally I'm taking people who have, you know, part-time jobs making like 20, maybe 30 grand a year or whatever. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, you know, one of the women I'm working with right now, she took a part-time job making about 25 grand a year up to 100 grand a year, still in part-time hours, huge shift, like more than tripled her income. Another guy I'm working with has made, you know, 25 grand in the last 6 weeks in new business. You know, these are huge things. Another one of my clients has onboarded this very first client ever at an $8,000 price point with $950 per month coming in on the retainer. In fact, actually, we just talked on Friday that $950 per month retainer is now like a $5,000 per month retainer. So, you know, those are the kind of results folks are having because of making shifts like the ones we just talked about intentionally pursuing the clients you can serve the best. And how that's just in dramatic contrast to going out there and selling these technical services. Do you need a website? Come on, get real. Your website's a mess. You know, let's fix that for you. Let's get responsive or whatever. You know, those types of techniques don't onboard these high value clients at the price points you need with the business structure that's going to give you stability. And if you want to fix that, let's get on the phone and talk about it and see if you're a good fit for the program. If you're not a good fit or this is not the direction you want to go, that's totally cool too. We can at least dial in your marketing a little bit, you know, figure some stuff out. On the other hand, if this is the kind of help that you're looking for, then let's see if it's going to be a good fit for you. And we'll talk about what's going on. What kind of clients do you want to work with? What kind of marketing do you currently have? What do you feel like's not working? What do you feel like is working? We'll go through the whole thing in depth for 45 minutes. And I think you're going to come away finding that it's a really insightful, probably the most insightful 45 minutes you've ever spent talking about your business. And it's free. So head over to doublestack.net/call and we can get on the phone and kind of get you pointed in this direction and get the kind of results that you really want for your business so that it's going to be great for you. It's going to be great for your clients. And then right on down the road, you know, you're going to be helping your clients win new customers too. So those customers are actually going to be even better off and better served than ever before. Huge win right on down the line when you make this shift. And I would love to talk to you about it. So head over to doublestack.net/call and we'll set up a time. You'll get on my calendar there and that'll be it. So that's all I got for this week. If you're on Facebook checking this out and you want to kind of get this on the go, don't forget that we've got the podcast available now. You can get that at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you happen to be listening to the podcast in the car and you want to kind of chime in and be part of this live every Tuesday at 2 p.m., head over to Facebook. And it's Building High Value WordPress Sites is the name of the Facebook group. It's free to join. And then you can ask me questions, interact with me live during these sessions, and that'll be that. And I'll also keep an eye on the comments throughout the week. So if, you know, any thoughts come up or whatever, you just let me know, or just give me a high five, boop, and let me know that you're there. That'll be cool too. And until next week, there we go. That's what we got. And I look forward to seeing you guys next Tuesday.